We are here to train sati, yeah? Not walk around like a lunatic. So what shall I talk about? Any ideas? What do you do with your life? Yeah. Studying for what? For what? For earning money. So why do you need money? To have a house, to have food, to have clothes, and toys.
Pay the bills.
Yeah, but the bills are, you know, house, clothes, you know, medicine, eh? And what else? That's why you work. You work to live, but not being alive. Huh? At the end of your life, what is there? What have you done with your life? Huh? Never ask the question. It's very important for us to ask ourselves the question, what do we want to do with our life? Not just working, working, working. Everybody around works, huh? Huh? And then you get older, you know, you marry, you know, have children, you know, and then you work for the children, and now you work for your mother, then you work for your children, and then you work for the children's children. And in the end, you know, you give up the spoon. That's a German expression, you know, when you die, to give up the spoon. Heute am Ende. Ching chong, gin kao, die. Huh? And then what happens next? You're born again. And you do that forever. Born, die, born, die, born, die, born, die. Huh? Is it so much fun studying? And then working, huh? Ask your colleagues, Asangi, huh? Is it so much fun to work? Huh? Ask Dora, huh? You're working here, huh? Is it fun? No, not really, yeah? Most of us, you know, don't have a work, you know, that is a lot of fun. Huh? Some of us might have, huh? They enjoy working. So what is the life about? Huh? Ask yourself. It's an important question. And what do you want to take with you in the next life? What you certainly take with you is your bab and your bun. Yeah? That means you're demarried and you're married. And the how much demarried and married you have depends on, yeah, where you're going. You're going down, you know, because you have too much demerit, or you're going up because you have lots of merit, yeah? Or you come back as a human. In the next life you do the same thing. You're born again. Yeah? If you're born as a human being, yeah? You're born again. You learn to walk, you learn to talk, then you go to school, and then you go to university again, and then you work for the rest of your life, and when you're old and sick, then you retire. Sounds like a lot of fun, huh? Huh? No? So why? Why are you still doing it? Why are we doing it? Eh? Because everyone around us does it. Yeah? We don't see another way. We don't see the way out. And if we don't have Buddhism as the main religion within our country, we won't see the way out. Well, what do we need to see the way out? What did the Lord Buddha before he became a recluse? He saw people getting old. He saw people dying. And these are people born. And then he asked himself, what is this? Yeah? Everybody, you know, who is born has to die. Everybody who is born has to get sick. Everybody who is born has to get old. What is this life about? But there are only three things. Until he saw, on the last day, he saw a recluse. And then he wondered, why is it? What is he doing? Why is he differently from the people around him? Yeah? Why doesn't he have any work? Why does he live, you know, in ragged clothes? So he went and looked for the way out. If you don't look for the way out, or if we in our country don't have recluses, that means monks, we don't know that there's another form of life. Yeah? In Thailand, wherever you go, you see monks. Yeah, in the morning they come and pinda pot, you see them, and then the Thais put food into in their bowls. So they know there's another way of life. But in countries, where the monks are coming from, or where you are coming from, there are no monks. You don't see them every day on the Pindapat, on alms round. So you don't know. And you forget. If you see it once in a while, you tend to forget. But if you see it every day, you know that there is a way out. And if there is a way out, why are the people who look for the way out don't want anything from this world? All the things that we want, they refuse. All the comfort, the food, the clothes, fancy clothes, and fancy houses, or things like that, they refuse. Why? These are questions we should ask ourselves. What have they found that we have lost? They must have found something. Otherwise, I mean, why would they live like that? They're looking for the way out, and they're looking for the way into the heart, and they're looking for the happiness that arises in the heart. But for that, it is not an easy path. The Lord Buddha said, if there wouldn't be a happiness that exceeds the happiness of the world, that the world can give us, nobody would go this path. So he told us, there is a happiness that exceeds the happiness of the world that every one of us can experience if he goes this path. And that keeps us on the path. Otherwise, fighting the kilesas and, having all these tudangas or ascetic practices doesn't make any sense. Why should we torture ourselves? We are not Christian monks who torture themselves. We are Buddhist monks. Christian monks like to torture themselves. Yeah? They take the whip and whip themselves for the sins that they do. And then after whipping them, they do another sin. Yeah? And then they whip them. And so on and so on. No, we don't torture ourselves, We torture ourselves, in quotation mark, to find the way out, to find the way to happiness. And the ones, and then on the way, on the path, we find out that there is an element in our heart that tortures us, and that it is not us. This is the principle of anatta. Whatever I can see, whatever I can feel, whatever I can experience, cannot be me, cannot be mine, is not myself. I live in this body, I see this body, I experience the body cannot be me. Because who is the one who experiences it? Does the body know it's a body? No. Does the eyes know what it sees? No. Does the ear know what it hears? No. So who hears, who sees, who knows there is a body, who feels? Who knows this feeling is good? Who knows that the feeling is bad? There must be something inside of us who tells us constantly. And if you just start meditation, you know, for a few hours, you constantly hear this voice. Oh, I need to do it like this. I need to do it like this. I like this. I don't like this. Who is that? And who hears that voice? Huh? Ever thought about that? It tells you, I am like this. I am like that. Huh? You hear that voice? It constantly tells you what to do, what to like, what not to like, what not to do, and what you experience, and how the experience is, and so on, and so on. Get rid of this voice, you know, and then for the first time in your life, you live. Just live in the world of experience. And there's nobody who tells you what kind of experience it is. Nobody tells you if this experience is good or if that experience is bad. There's just this pure experience. And that's a time when we are really happy. When we are satisfied. When we don't want anything. I mean, we can achieve the state of mind through meditation. Through the practice of mindfulness. Through the practice of sati. Through the practice of concentration and developing sati. Knowing that there's a thought. Going back to the Buddha or going back to the breath. Knowing that there's memory coming up and instantly going back to the Buddha or instantly going back to the breath until there are no more thoughts coming up and no more memories coming up. And then we feel relieved for the first time in our life. Ah. And because we think, wow, that is so nice, you know, then we're going back out. Then we have to do all the work again, you know, to get back in, you know, and then we think, oh, this is so nice. And the moment we have this thought, you know, we are gone out again. Until we learn, you know, even in that state, you know, not to have any thought, yeah? Or not to pay any interest to this thought. That is called samadhi. And samadhi is that experience that shows us that there is something that the world cannot give us. With all the pleasures of the world, I don't say that there are no pleasures of the world. Of course there are pleasures in the world, yeah? When we eat nice food, that is pleasurable. When we go, you know, when we go and have a trip, that is pleasurable. When we meet a nice person, that can be pleasurable. When we have a nice conversation, that can be pleasurable. But it is nothing compared to the happiness or to the to the peacefulness or to the stillness that is there in the heart all the time. It is there all the time. But we cover it up with shit. And we don't want to touch the shit, you know. That's why we keep it, you know, keep it underneath. Huh? And when we start meditation or practice, then we have to remove all the shit. All these layers of dirt, all these layers of mud, all these layers of shit. And that is not easy. So people give up sooner or later, they will give up. Because it is a tedious work, yeah. But underneath it, underneath all these layers of dirt and shit and mud, you know, there comes a shining heart. A heart, you know, out of gold. And that is the happiness that is always there. That is the comfort that is always there. We just cover it up day by day in, day out. We hear this, you know, it covers it up. We know this, it covers it up. And the more we know, the more it covers it up. The more we think, the more it covers it up. The moment we stop thinking, it comes back to life. Huh? That's when we remove the layers. Yeah? When we remove all the layers of the thoughts and all the layers of the memories. And the memories, you know, once the memories can have several layers, you know. In the beginning, it is just memories from the last previous year, maybe month, yeah. And then comes the memories, you know, of the last previous years, and then, you know, memories of this and memories that and thoughts of this. So we have to remove, yeah, layer by layer by layer until the heart starts to shine. And when the heart starts to shine, we are happy. And that's what we are actually looking in our life, our happiness. Oh, We don't look for sadness. We don't look for depression. We look for the happiness or peacefulness. And there, you know, in the state of samadhi, we realize, if we stay long enough, then we suddenly realize that we don't need anything to be happy. And when you're in the world, how many things do you need? Look at your life. Yeah? In the morning you get up. Huh? What do you need? You know, I need this, I need that. Yeah, I need to go shopping in the evening. I need to buy this, I need to buy that. Yeah, I need to get rid of this. I need to clean my apartment. I need to clean this. Yeah? Ah. And in the evening when we go back home, you know, we are tired. And then we just want to eat something and sleep. And that is our day in, day out life. Yeah? Until the body is completely broken down, and then we go into retirement. And then, every morning we get up. Yeah, we eat something, then we go to work. Yeah? After work, yeah, we clean up. Maybe we clean up our apartment or our house. We go shopping, you know, and cook some food or go to a restaurant. And then we go to sleep. In other words, you know, in a very, very drastic way, you can say, you get up, you do something, you eat something, you do something, you eat something, you do something, and you go to sleep. And so every day is the same. No matter if you call it doing something, work, cleaning up, going on business, going for your pleasures, yeah? Going to the cinema or whatever, yeah? It's doing something. It's bleak, quite bleak, this life, huh? But we have not realized, because we call everything differently. And because we call everything differently, cleaning up, we call cleaning up. But when you look at the movement of the body, cleaning up, just like preparing food, is the same movement. Arm movement, foot movement, body movement. When you work, it's the same movement. It's just bodily movement. When you go for a walk or go for a stroll for pleasure, it's movement. You move the body. But because we call it differently, we are deluded that these are different things. But actually, when we have sati, you know, and when we look at everything what we do and disassemble it in the movement of the body, I mean, this life is so boring. It is utterly boring. Because we do nothing else, you know, since we are born and moving this body around. But because we call it differently, yeah. Sometimes we call it reading, you know, so we have a book, you know, and read page, you know, it's moving the fingers, you know, and moving our eyes, yeah. So, getting up, doing something, eating, doing something, go to sleep. Getting up, eating, doing something, go to sleep. Huh, Linda? Huh? That's our life. Huh? Boring! Huh? When you look at Liz, when you look at this way. But we don't look at this way. Because we don't live in the present moment. We live in the future. I want to do this. Oh, when I have enough money, I want to buy this. Oh, when I have my degrees, I want this kind of work. Oh, when I have this kind of work, I want another work, yeah? Because we don't live in the present moment. That's why we don't realize it. We always live in the future. We always think ahead of time. Or if we don't live in the future, we live in the past. Oh, 20 years ago, you know, it was so nice. Why is it now so difficult? Yeah? 20 years ago, it was so easy. Why don't we start to live in the present moment where we see the things and experience the thing? And then we know, it's just getting up, huh? Getting up, doing something, eating, doing something, you know, and sleeping. Every day the same thing. From the day we are born, yeah? Until the day we die. When you look at this way, you know, it is drastically bleak, yeah? There's no excitement, yeah? But because we call it differently, and because we live in the future and the past, never in the present moment, we don't realize that. And that's a problem. We live in our views, imaginations. Oh, if the weather would be nice, you know, I would go, you know, and grill something, you know, do this or do that, or go out with my friend, or go to the beach and swim, yeah, and so on. But the weather is not nice today. It is cloudy, you know, and it is raining a little bit, so we can't do that, so we are unhappy. Yeah? Oh, I want to meet this person has no time, okay, I'm unhappy. Yeah? I want to get this, I can't get it, you know, we are unhappy. Huh? Or we love somebody, you know, and this loved person, you know, goes away, so we are unhappy. And how often are you unhappy in your life? Quite a bit, huh? We want things, yeah, and that creates a dukkha. If you don't want anything, and that is the experience of samadhi. When we are in samadhi, we don't want anything. And that's where we feel really happy. At ease, we completely feel at ease. There are a few moments, you know, however long we can stay in samadhi, where we don't need anything. And then we realize we really don't need anything. And the moment we come out of samadhi, we instantly need this and that, yeah? Huh? So think about it, yeah? Be more in the present moment. Live in the present moment. Know what you're doing, why you're doing, and what is the result of your action, huh? Or your speech. Remember this, yeah? I mean, we call ourselves Homo sapiens. But we are not Homo sapiens, yeah? We are Homo robotos. Roboter. We live on our conditioning. We live in the conditioning. And conditioning is nothing else, yeah, than robots. Yeah? They are conditioned. They are programmed. Conditioning and programming is one and the same word. If I see my mother, I react like this. If I see my friend, I react like that. Or I be like this. Or I behave like this. If I see my whoever, my colleague, I will be like this. Yeah? If I see my boss, I will be like this. That is conditioning. That's not free. That's not freedom. The Lord Buddha said about Nibbana, it is the unconditioned. There is no more condition. Whatever, you have free decision. When you see your mother, you know, I mean, you can be open and suddenly you realize this is a person I've never seen. But when we go home and see our mother and father, I mean, we don't realize if we see our mother and father, you know, that we have seen for the last 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years, yeah? And we can't change that view, yeah? We can never see them as they are, as people, as persons. Just like we meet somebody, you know, somebody outside we have never seen before, then we see him as a person. Yeah? But the longer we know him, the less we see him. We only see the image that we have about him. Because over time we created views. Yeah? I mean, look at your relationships and you know. Yeah? I mean, in the beginning it is exciting, you know, and after a while it becomes... Ah, yeah, yeah, I know. No! You don't know anything. This is a person that constantly changed. You are a person that constantly changed. But we don't like these changes. We like everything, you know, to be the same. Very strange. The nature is never be the same. People change over time. Our parents change over time. They have been young. We can't believe it. That they have been young as us, yeah, made the same mistakes as we did, yeah. They might have learned from some of the mistakes. We have learned from other mistakes. Yeah? So we are. Yeah? That is conditioning. We see people as not as they are, but we see people, you know, the way we want to see them, or the way, you know, we accumulated our views about them, how they are. And they cannot be otherwise. Our conditioning doesn't allow that for them to change. So the conditioning, you know, puts us into a prison. It puts us, confines us into a prison. We cannot get out of this prison unless we break this conditioning, unless we break the rules. And the first time we break these rules, for at least for a certain amount of time, is when we enter samadhi. When we enter samadhi, there's no conditioning. There's just the experience. There's no future because there are no thoughts and memories. There's no past because there's no thoughts and memories. There's no fear. There's absolutely no fear. And most important of us, there's no loneliness. We don't feel separated from everybody else. When we come back, we feel separated. And that what longs us, you know, especially as human beings, longs us to make contact to other people because we feel lonely inside of us. We feel lonely. We want to have contact with anything. But the moment we get into samadhi, we are one with everybody else. We don't need contact. We are happy with ourselves. And the practice, first of all, the practice that we go through is the Fourth Noble Truth. The Fourth Noble Truth says, you know, there are three, you know, sila, samadhi, panya. Sila, the five precepts, keeping the five precepts. When we don't keep the five precepts, we cannot practice. We keep them as best as we can. We cannot keep them perfectly. And then we train samadhi. Concentrating on the tip of the nose and knowing that the breath goes in, knowing that the breath goes out, knowing that the breath is calm, knowing that the breath is not calm, not trying to change the breath. Have you noticed, you know, I mean, whatever we touch, we want to change according to our views and opinions, according to our conditioning. The breath has to be calm. That's not the way. We observe. That is the way. We observe how the breath is and know how the breath is, or we observe the Buddha and know how the Buddha is. Is the Buddha fast? Then we know the Buddha is fast. Is the Buddha slow? Then we know the Buddha is slow. Is the Buddha deep? Then we know the Buddha is deep. We don't try to make it. All our life we try to make the things around us, yeah. We arrange our apartment the way that we like, you know, or the food, you know, the way we like, you know, and this the way we like, or the way we think it has to be. No. I mean, you breathe since you were born and you never paid attention to the breath. So you never, yeah. You never controlled the breath. But now then you do meditation, you suddenly start to control the breath. Huh? No, it has to become... No! Observing. If you don't know what observing is, then observe the animals here in the monastery. You can't change them, you can't control them. They will have their own ways, you know, of how to behave. And that's how you can... can fathom what does it mean to observe the breath or to observe the Buddha. We constantly want to control things. Yeah? We are actually control freaks. Yeah? Control our environment, control this, control our partner, control whatever we are, you know, we try to control. Yeah? And that makes us so unhappy. Let the people be, let the animals be the way they are, yeah? And that's the same thing with our breath. So we observe the breath, and observe the breath, know that the breath, yeah? The knowing is very important, and that makes us a lot of troubles. We don't want to know, we just stay with the breath, and you know, and when we stay with the breath, or stay with the Buddha, and then the mind gets calm, and then we get a little bit more comfortable, but the knowing about the quality of the breath is an effort. Huh? And this effort we don't like. You know, we are lazy. Yeah? Our nature is laziness. Huh? We are too lazy to know. Ah, well, what does it matter? Yeah, what does it matter? Yeah, I'm just staying with the breath. Yeah, And I feel okay, yeah? Knowing, how is the breath now? Is it the in-breath? Is it the out-breath? Is it, you know, is it changing from the in-breath to the out-breath? Huh? Or is the Buddha just starting? Or is the Buddha ending? We are too lazy to know that. Huh? That's why we never get deeper in our meditation. But that's why we never get deeper in our practice. This knowingness, and together with the concentration on the object, brings us the results that we are looking for. But instead, you know, instead of doing the work that we are supposed to do, we are looking for the results all the time. Yeah? And that doesn't work. Oh, yesterday I had such a nice meditation. Where is it? Yeah? And what led to this nice meditation? Doing our work. Yeah? And we forget it. We constantly forget it. Yeah? And if it is difficult today, you know, I mean, it goes up. You know, one day it is difficult, the next day it is more easy, then it is more difficult, then we have to fight a lot. We have to fight with loss and torpor, we have to fight with tiredness, we have to fight with boredom, we have to fight with disinterest, and so on. And on these days, you know, where we have to do a lot of fight, you know, it seems, you know, that it is difficult. But when our meditation or practice is difficult, that's where we actually learn something. When it's easy, you know, I mean, there's nothing what we learn. Yeah? When we have to fight the kilesas who constantly put some hindrances on our path, yeah? Throw some stones on our path so that it is stony. Yeah? We don't like that. We like it to have it easy. Yeah, we like to have it easy. Oh, I just want to stay with my Buddha. Yeah? That's not the way where we don't learn anything. Yeah? We stay stupid all the time. We only learn from our mistakes, or we learn through fighting. And that is an important thing. We need to learn. We need to learn how the kilesas constantly trick us. We have to learn the tricks of the magician. There is a magician that is called avijja. And avijja is one part of our heart, and Dhamma is the other part of our heart. But neither are we Dhamma, nor are we avijja. We are the one who observes avijja and allows, you know, the kilesas to work, or allows the Dhamma to work. That's the real citta. The Dhamma is there, yeah? It wants to go on the throne. Yeah? The kilesas, yeah? So the Dhamma fights the kilesas, the kilesas fight the Dhamma, and we stay in the back and watch them. Observe them. Yeah? We are neither of this. And avijja is the mastermind. And it has tricked us for billions of lives. Maybe even for trillions of lives. Life after life after life. How often have we lived as a human being? Huh? How many different jobs did we have? How many different professions did we have? Huh? Sometimes, you know, we were a farmer. Yeah? Sometimes we were a governor or something like that. Yeah? Sometimes we were slaves, and most of the time we have been warriors. Yeah? Soldiers. Yeah? Fighting. Look at the history of the history that we know for the last 7,000 years. What was it? The history of war. Huh? We like to fight. Huh? So how often have we been soldiers? Huh? And fight in this battle or fight in that battle or fight, huh? Sometimes we have been the farmers, you know, who get the food, you know, for the soldiers. Oh, yeah. Or sometimes we have even been, you know, the king, you know, that guards the army, yeah? That sends the army to fight. Only in the human realm, yeah? How often have we been in the hell realm? So many times. Yeah? We don't even want to think about it. Because we did some misdeeds, and that's where we go to hell. If you don't keep the five precepts, and one of the precepts is not harming any living being. Yeah? If we harm any living being, then we go to hell. And once we come back from hell, we go to the ghost realm. When we come back from the ghost realm, we come back as a human being. Yeah? When we are a human being, people will kill us. That's not a good perspective. Or harm us. That's not a good perspective. We want to be happy. We don't want other people to harm us. Yeah? So we should not harm others. Yeah? That's why in the Western languages we have the saying, and probably also in the Asian language, don't do unto others what you don't want others to do unto you. And the second part of that sentence is missing. For whatever happens to you is what you have done unto others. Ha! Nobody tells us that. Yeah? We have to figure that out or find that out through the teachings of the Lord Buddha. Whatever happens to us in this life is the karma of previous lives. Whatever we have done unto others, that's what others will do unto us. It's not the same person. Yeah? Karma is completely, has nothing to do with this person or that person or that. Yeah? It comes through a certain person, who has the characteristic to fulfill that kind of karma unto us. Yeah? So how can we blame that person? Yeah? If we blame somebody, if something bad happens to us, we have to blame ourselves. Yeah? Not our parents, not our teachers, not our girlfriend or boyfriend or this or that person, or boss, or colleague. We have to blame ourselves. Take responsibility for our life. That is one thing that we don't like. Yeah? We like receive all the good things, yeah? That is our right, yeah? But when we receive bad things, that is the fault of others. Huh? What kind of stupid thinking, idiotic thinking is that, huh? Either both of us, it has come to us, because of our own deeds, or nothing comes, huh? But the Lord Buddha teaches us everything, everything that comes back to us is because of our own doing. Be it good doing or be it bad doing. Be it merit or be it demerit. So whatever happens in our life is the result of our karma, of our previous life. And whatever we do in this life, will determine, plus some karma from the old life, will determine our next life. That's also not nice to hear, yeah? It's difficult to accept for us, yeah? Because we love to blame other people. Huh? We love to blame our parents, our relatives, the teachers, or if not, then at least the government, yeah? And the government is responsible for all our mishappenings, huh? Yeah? No! We, the only one who is responsible for whatever happens to us is here. Yeah? And that's what we do in a practice. Yeah? We train this person. Yeah? We train this person to be good. Hmm? Only to be good, only to do meritorious deeds. Yeah? That's what we train. Yeah? And not to go into the bad thing. That's what we train. Yeah? Once we are only good, then we even get rid of the good thing. And then go back to where we came from. Long, long time ago. Yeah? Trillions of lives ago. Yeah? That's where we want to go back. That's where the Lord Buddha went back. Or that's where the Arahants went back. Went back to the natural state or to the whatever you call it. To Nibbana. From there we came. Yeah. And as I explained before, if you don't know, your true essence, the true essence is the water. Yeah? And when it falls from the clouds, it forms. It takes on form. In this kind of form, one drop of water is bigger, another drop of water is smaller, another drop of water is more shiny, another one is more bleak. That is why we all seem to be different. And we latch on these differences, we latch on these forms, and that's where we get deluded. Yeah? People are people. Yeah? Animals are animals. Yeah? They are all beings. Yeah? We don't see the being because of the form. Oh, we don't see the contents because of the form. Yeah? All what we look is at the ways. We don't look at the contents of the ways. And that is what brings us, you know, more and more and more into difficulties. We should look back. We should go back to the essence. But that is not an easy path. That is a very, very hard work. And you really have to do it, yeah? Full, wholeheartedly. Nam. Wholeheartedly. Not half-heartedly. Wholeheartedly brings wholehearted results. Half-hearted brings half-hearted results. Yeah? Okay? It's enough for today. If you have any questions, well, now you may ask them. Yeah, you have one?
She has a question. How to overcome fear?
How to overcome fear? Huh? First, the first thing is not to say, I'm afraid, to say, there is fear. And then observe the fear, yeah, while you do your Buddha or while you observe the breath, and then you notice the fear is gone. The moment the thought comes in, the moment that, you know, memory comes in, the fear is coming back. And then you do that, you know, and then you do the same thing again. There is fear, there is fear, there is fear, and observe it. And see where it is coming from. And the more, you know, I mean, it comes back, you know, and sooner or later you will see the kinds of thoughts or the kinds of memories that cause the greatest fear. And if it's always the same kind of memory or same kind of thought, then you investigate this thought. Yeah? And ask, you know, what am I afraid of? I have to die. Yeah. And everything, you know, that comes back to me is coming back to me because of my karma. I mean, you have to fight, you know, you have to get clever in these things. Yeah? Fear, yeah? Loneliness, stubbornness, and so on. You really have to investigate that. Yeah? Boredom, yeah? Laziness. All these things, all these hindrances, sloth, torpor, tiredness. Oh, I'm tired, I go to bed. No. Send the Kilesas to go to bed. Nam. Huh? Tell them, you know, you can go to bed, you can sleep 24 hours a day, and I'm working 24 hours a day. Huh? Kong rao mai chai kilet. Kilet mai chai rao. Huh? Ngo kilet ko ngua ngon, ko, huh? Song hai, pai non, ya kuon rao. Huh? This is the most important thing. It is not us. The moment we take it on and say, I'm afraid, gone. No, there's no, we cannot change it. Yeah? I mean, we are completely, you know, caught up in their scheming. Yeah? They like to scheme. Yeah? It's the Kilesas who bring that up. What are we afraid of? Yeah? We are afraid, mostly we are afraid of pain. Yeah? Investigate some pain and then, you know. Yeah? Huh? I mean, either mental pain, you know, or afraid of physical pain. Yeah? That's what we're most afraid of. That's why we constantly run to see the doctor when we are in pain. Huh? Because we're afraid of pain. Yeah? So then investigate some pain. Yeah, to see, understand, what is pain? Where is it coming from? But this principle of anatta is in all cases is very useful. Okay, there's tiredness. Now then we can investigate it. There's fear, then we can investigate it. There's pain, then we can investigate it. When I say I'm in pain, I'm afraid, I'm tired, whoops, everything is gone. Yeah. And that's how the Kilesas trick us into believing that what they tell us that we are. But that's their opinion. It is like a friend comes to you and says, you are tired. And then you just say, yes, my Lord. Yeah, I'm tired. Huh? Or he comes to see you and says, oh, you're afraid. You must be afraid of this. Yeah. And then you say, yes, my Lord. Yeah. You have governed me for such a long time. You should know. Yeah. What is right and what is wrong. Yeah. No. It's a friend. Yeah. Who tries to mislead you. How often did he lie to you? How often did you tell you, if you do this, you will be happy? Yeah? And you did this and you were not happy. How often did he lie to you? He constantly lies to us. But we never check on him. If we have a real friend, another person who lies to us 3 times, we don't believe him anymore. He's a liar, we can't trust him. But our kilesas, we trust all the time. Whatever they say, it is true. I'm so depressed. No. So then we look at this, And then instead of saying, I'm depressed, or I'm sad, or I'm unhappy, or I'm lonely, or I'm afraid, or I'm fearful, or this, just say, there's fearfulness, there's loneliness, and then we can investigate it. Huh? Okay? Understood. So now you have a question. What was your name?
Michelle.
Michelle.
Yeah. Okay. I wanted to ask, how do we prepare our mind if, let's say, we want to make a determination to sit for 2 to 3 hours?
When you sit down, you make the determination, now I'm going to sit for 3 hours. And for some people it works, and for some people it doesn't work. For myself, it never worked. When I said, I sit for 3 hours, mostly after half an hour I was up. No? And then I needed to have a trick. I said, okay, tonight you go to sleep, very early. You just sit for half an hour and then, But within my mind I knew I'm going to sit through, I'm sitting for 5 hours, And then, And then the kilesas were happy, we go to sleep very early, But I was sitting and sitting and not getting up. So for some people it works like this. If their determination is not strong enough, then it works. But if they have you have to look at your characteristic tendency. If you were determined to do something in your life and it always worked, then you can do it like this. Okay, now I sit for 2 hours. But don't take it too long. If you are previously only set for 1 hour, don't make it, 5 hours or 6 hours. Just make it a little longer, 1.5 hours, and the next time 2 hours, and the next time 2.5 hours. Because that is also a trick of the kilesas. I'm sitting 5 hours, And then after 2 hours or 1.5 hours, say, see, you can't do it, you failed, It's not, they have so many ways to get at us. They want to break our determination. That is their intention. They don't want to practice. So they want to break our determination. But if you have a very strong determination, there's no problem. If your determination is strong enough, then trick them. Tonight I go early to sleep. And then send to sleep and then... Just sit and don't get up. And see whatever you can do. Okay, other question.
You say about accent and content of
this. Speak up.
No, you say about content and form and the accent. Can you elaborate more? I don't really understand.
The form and the contents, or?
The content.
The contents, what is the contents of a water drop? Of a water drop.
Rainwater drop.
Rainwater.
What is the contents? Water. But we don't see the water. We see the drops, all these drops, when it rains, we don't see the water, we see all the drops. Even if it fall onto you, we don't see the water. We see the drops, we see the form, but we don't see the contents. When you see a person, you see the form of the person. And depending on the form of the person, you decide what kind of person it is. And then even if you can't decide completely because of the form, then you decide on what they talk. It is also a form. The form of behavior, the form of talking, But we don't see the contents of it. We don't see it as a being. When it is an animal, we don't see it as a being. We see it as an animal. in some time, and then we decide this animal is useful for us, yeah? So we like it, you know? Or it is, you know, it's just nice food, you know? So we kill it and eat it, yeah? Or this kind of animal, you know, is our enemy, like mosquitoes, so we kill them, yeah? We don't see the being that is inside that form. That's what I mean. Yeah? And you don't see your mother, yeah? The being of your mother, you just see the form, yeah, that you have seen for 20 or 30 years. Yeah? And also, you know, her characteristic tendencies, yeah. I mean, you all memorized it, yeah. And you can't change, you know. I mean, you actually, yeah. I mean, you feel trapped inside, you know, inside a conditioning, yeah. When you talk to your mother or your father. You can't behave outside of this conditioning. You're trapped in that, yeah. Unless you get rid of this conditioning, and then you can see them just as new person, yeah? Like everybody, you know, everybody that you meet every day is a new person. Like you, yeah? Sometimes you get up, you know, and you're really cranky, yeah? Sometimes you're in a, you know, in a light mood, yeah? And sometimes you're in a bad mood, yeah? So I mean, every day you change, yeah? Yeah? So see the contents, not the form, not, yeah? But it's difficult to understand because we are so trained on form. Yeah? All our life, you know, we assess people, you know, by their behavior, we assess people by, you know, by what they wear, we assess people what kind of car they drive, what kind of house they have. That is what we have learned since day one of our birth. Yeah? If they smile or if they don't smile, yeah? And so on, and so on. Okay?
About blaming others.
Yeah.
For example, if someone does something bad to me,
yeah?
Is it better to accept it in silence or...
Try to accept it. And don't, you know, don't blame this other person.
Can I tell the other person that what he did or she did was...
If there's no anger inside, yes. But if there's anger, you know, then you should not. Yeah?
And better to fight it inside.
Yeah. See, you know, and if you see, if somebody hurts you... Then you look at that hurt, huh? And then you look at the tendencies of your own character, and then you see that this tendency is still there to hurt in the same way. And that's why you got it back. Yeah? It might not be, yeah, it might be dormant, but you will find it. It's still there. Yes, yes. We don't like to admit it. Because we behave in the same way, yeah? It is very difficult to accept. I understand that. Very difficult. Yeah. And you might have to go through a lot of tears, yeah? Of self-pity, yeah? And refusal, yeah? No, I'm not like this. Yes, you are like this. No, I'm not like this. Yes, you are like this. No, I'm not like this. Yeah? Until, you know, I mean, finally you accept it and then you can see it. And once you can see it, you can throw it out. And the next time he cannot hurt you anymore. He does the same thing then and you say, fine. Yeah. Okay? Yeah.
May I know what is...
Speak up. I mean, my ears are not good.
May I know what is Pinam's question?
Oh, she said, you know, I mean, because I mean, it is so painful that she can't sit anymore if she can sit on a stool or on a chair, yeah? I said, yes, it is okay, but, you know, the concentration is not as good as if you sit in just cross-legged or half lotus or full lotus, yeah? Because when you sit on a chair, you know, I mean, the center of gravity, you know, is not the same, yeah? The center of gravity when you sit cross-legged or in full lotus, you know, it is exactly in front of your chitta. So it is very easy to concentrate. But of course it might be very painful. So, when you have so much pain, you know, that you can't bear it anymore, yeah, then you say, you know, okay, I'm defeated, Kilesas, you defeated me, yeah? But tomorrow or in the afternoon I try it again. And each time I try it again, I try it a little bit, you know, just one or two breaths more. Yeah? So that over the time, you know, I will get longer and longer and longer. Yeah? Until I'm able to defeat the Kilesas, yeah? To see, you know, where the Dukkha Vedana, where the pain is coming from. Yeah? To understand pain. Because that is the most thing that drives us nuts. Pain. Yeah? And when we die, yeah, I mean, there is so much pain. And there's no way that we can evade this pain. Yeah? And what do we do in pain? We give up our sati. Hmm? When we give up our sati, we don't have any direction where we go. Yeah? So the karma just pushes us, you know, wherever it is, you know, it is leading us. We don't have our decision-making, you know, engine is gone because it is obstructed by this pain. You understand that? Yeah? That's why we have to counteract pain. So that in the moment of death, yeah, we are not completely helpless. We can still direct, you know, where we want to go. Yeah?
So someone who is medicated at the time of death?
Yeah. Well, he doesn't know it, yeah?
Could they have the ability to...
No. If you're drunk, you have no ability, you know, to decide where you go. You just follow, you know. Yeah.
But if they know that they actually could have a choice...
Yeah, I mean, tell them.
No, but I mean, they could be sedated, but still have an operating choice. Like they can still choose. No? I mean, not sedated to the point of gone, but pain-free.
Pain-free. Death is never pain-free.
No, but...
less pain.
Less
pain. I mean, the more they are sedated, the less they have choice, yeah?
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean... if you drunk a little bit, you know, you do things that you wouldn't do when you're completely sober.
Yeah, right.
You choose wrongly because, you know, because of the less pain, yeah?
I was just hoping for someone else.
I understand that your question is not coming from you, you know, from you personally, but from all the people that, you know, you nursed, yeah? Yeah?
Well, one in particular.
Yeah, or one especially. No, I mean, and if they have never trained spiritually, they will not have a chance. They will not have a chance. Yeah. So I mean, then you know they can be sedated, you know, or not sedated, you know, they will still go, you know, follow their strongest karma. But if they are trained spiritually and they see that they have a, you know, that they have a choice at every moment, you know, to do either this or do that, yeah, then if they, the more they are sedated, the less choice they have, and they will just follow, you know, the main rule. Okay? So for normal people, you know, who have no spiritual inclination, it doesn't really matter if they are sedated or not. Okay, so...